This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll discuss how the Better Care Reconciliation Act would affect Louisiana, and we'll share another episode of The Listening Post. Then, Maroon 5 keyboardist, singer, and songwriter PJ Morton stops by to talk about his new album, Gumbo, and his homecoming performance this weekend at the Essence Music Festival. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. The U.S. Senate health care bill was released last week, and it has many eyebrows raised. Joining me now is health policy expert, Dr. Mark Diana. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How would this health care bill affect Louisiana families?
So I will give you a couple of big, broad categories. Okay. The first one is Medicaid. Medicaid, when Governor Edwards took office, was expanded to over 400,000 people. Mm-hmm. That's in addition to those who already qualified for Medicaid. This bill would roll that back. So all 400 or more individuals who got coverage through the Medicaid expansion will lose it. It may actually be more than 400,000 because by the time the rollback hits, it mm-hmm. may be as many as 500,000 people.
Wow. And that's essentially, you know, making poor people priced out.
That's exactly right. And it goes further than that. So the cuts in the Senate health care bill would also cut back on traditional Medicaid. That is those people who were in the Medicaid program before the expansion. So there's a reduction to the Medicaid program in addition to the rollback of the expansion. Mm-hmm. And so that may be another 100,000 people who won't be eligible for Medicaid. So let me try to explain. Medicaid is a joint program the state and the federal government fund it.
Okay.
If the federal government cuts back their share of funding, which this bill would do, then the state either has to pick up that funding or cut services or not cover as many people. The Louisiana state budget is so tight that if that federal money goes away, it's hard to imagine what the state's going to do to pick that up. Mm-hmm. The only option they'd have would be to take it from education.
Right. And I was going to mention, you know, looking back at the 2017 fiscal year for the state has saved an estimated $200 million, right, from that expansion on Medicaid.
Right.
So looking ahead, we could have saved maybe $300, right, for the next year.
That's right. But instead, we stand to lose maybe $300 in the coming year when this is first implemented. Over 10 years, it may be as much as $8 billion.
Now, what about those individuals with pre-existing conditions? How are they affected by this health care bill?
That's a great question. So the Senate bill doesn't roll or say anything about pre-existing conditions. So the assumption is that it would, you know, keep those protections in place. The House bill, on the other hand, did allow the states the option to not require insurers to cover pre-existing conditions. Now, this is important because both bills don't include a mandate for coverage. Mm-hmm. So not to get too technical here, but if you don't have a mandate for people to get health insurance, but you require insurers to cover pre-existing conditions, what's going to happen is people won't buy insurance until they get sick.
Exactly.
So it's like buying insurance after you have an automobile accident, right?
And most times it's too late.
It's too late. And the insurance companies will only have people paying for insurance who need care, which drives up the cost. Mm-hmm. And so that making people cover pre-existing conditions, making insurance companies do that, and dropping the mandate is a recipe for disaster.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So we know the impact that this health care bill will have on most Louisiana families. Let's talk about the impact that it has on health care providers here in the state.
Right. So let me just add, before we move on to the providers, that there's another group of folks who are just above the Medicaid eligibility, but still poor enough that they're going to have trouble paying for insurance because the subsidies that the Affordable Care Act has were much more substantial than what the Senate bill has. So someone who is maybe 60 years old and makes $16,000 a year would pay $200 for their premiums under Affordable Care Act. It may be as much as half of their total income under this bill. It varies depending on the specifics, but those people will be priced out as well. Mm-hmm. So to the providers, if fewer people have insurance, and if most of those people are low-income people, they're not going to be able to pay for their care out of pocket.
Right.
So when they go to the ER, because that's where they'll go, because they don't have insurance, they're not going to go to, you know, a primary care provider. They'll wait until they're sick. We know this because this is what happened before the Affordable Care Act, mm-hmm. right? They'll go to the emergency department, which is a very expensive place to get care. That's where they'll get their primary care. And if they don't have the insurance, then the provider, that is a hospital, has to cover that cost. A hospital, depending on which one it is, may be able to make it up elsewhere with other insured patients, but some, like, you know, the University Medical Center, which has a disproportionate share of uninsured patients, may not be able to make it up. The small primary care clinics, particularly the safety net ones, they may go out of business, depending on how, you know, drastic the reductions are.
Right, and that's because the folks without insurance outnumber those with insurance.
That's right. And generally, the ones with insurance, if, particularly if it's not Medicaid, if it's private insurance, don't go to the safety net providers. They mm-hmm. don't go to the safety net clinics. They have a regular primary care physician, maybe part of the Ochsner system or the Tulane system or you know, someone else besides the safety net. The safety net clinics are the ones that are focused on providing care for low-income Medicaid and uninsured patients.
Yeah. You know, this healthcare bill kind of just came out of nowhere. As a health policy expert yourself, any idea why this was done in secrecy?
Well, so you're asking about the politics of it. And
yeah.
So I'm gonna venture a guess that the reason it was done in secrecy, despite the Republicans complaining about the Affordable Care Act being done in secrecy, which was nowhere near as secret as this process,
right?
Is that my guess is they don't want the opposition to have a chance to organize and really resist this legislation. So when I say the opposition, I don't mean the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party, they know no one's going to oppose it regardless. They're going to oppose it regardless. But the other organizations out there that represent providers like the American Hospital Association, the American Medical Association, a whole list of others have come out in opposition to this bill. But if they don't know what's in it, and they don't know the specifics, it's hard to mobilize opposition to it.
Right.
And so my guess is they did it in secret, and they're trying to get a vote within a week to prevent people to really organize because they know there's a lot of resistance out there.
Right. Health policy expert Mark Diana is the associate professor in health systems management at Tulane University. Thanks for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The latest episode of WWNO's community engagement project, The Listening Post, is focused on public safety. This month, the team examines how the city's $40 million public safety initiative helps or hinders the public.
The Listening Post, here's Yano.
Welcome to The Listening Post. I'm your host, Thomas Walsh.
This is my outdoor office out here. The rear automatic doors.
Nadra Enzi is busy making his rounds at the Healing Center, greeting patrons and business owners alike.
How's it going today?
How are you?
All right. And again,
Enzi's better known as Captain Black down here in the Marigny, and he's impossible to ignore. He's over 6 feet tall, broad-shouldered, and wears a white T-shirt that identifies him as Captain Black.
And if we head upstairs, I'll show you.
He's not a superhero, but he is trying to do some superhero things, like fill in the public safety gaps in a city that struggles with violence and insecurity.
You know, we're facing personnel, funding, and paradigm issues with traditional security and law enforcement that demands that the public really, once again, put itself back into public safety.
Captain Black was hired to address cases of theft, harassment, and assault at the Healing Center. When executed properly, DIY approaches to public safety like Captain Black's can make a difference. But with the city dedicating $40 million to public safety, should we still be relying on Captain Black? So, as we do, we set out into the city to try and get you some answers. Karen Schutz responded to our survey and invited us into her Broadmoor home. She's lived in several neighborhoods and, unfortunately, has encountered crime in all of them.
When I was in Mid-City, there was a drive-by shooting. My nephew happened to be over, and when he left, I go into the front, and I'm like, oh, let me just see what's going on. Maybe that was hell or whatever. I grab my raincoat. Something fell onto the ground, and I'm like, what is that? And it was bullet casings.
When Schutz moved here in the 80s, she thought crime was relatively isolated to certain neighborhoods. But now?
It's just there, and so you're conscious of it, even, you know, when you're not. for those of us that have just lived through it through the decades, it's something we've accepted, and that's kind of sad.
Crime and public safety are perennial issues here in New Orleans. It's something we're all going to have to come to terms with, whether we decide to move out, get actively involved, or just resign to accept it. We're here to kind of discuss what the community is feeling about that and what actions they're deciding to take. And we've got Claudia Lopez here in the studio to kind of help us sort through our survey results this month.
Hey, Thomas.
Good to see you again, Claudia.
You too.
So yeah, let's get to our survey results. We wanted to kind of get a sense about personal stories, personal accounts of crime. And what we kind of learned through our survey was that there's these primary, secondary, and what we'll call kind of passive relationships to crime.
Right. So there are different people in the city who are either a victim, a witness, or someone who just tunes into crime that's happening in their city through the news.
That's right. And some of these primary accounts are pretty intense. I mean, here's one guy who wrote into us and he said, "I felt unsafe when a car full of men pulled alongside me. One hopped out and yelled, 'Give it up,' and then fired a bullet toward me that whizzed past my face and lodged into my dashboard." That's pretty dang intense.
Yeah, that's very scary. I would have no idea what to do in this situation.
And then there's kind of secondary accounts.
So we have the people who know someone that has been a victim of crime, like this one where it says, "My mom got robbed at the K&B on Broad and Esplanade in the 90s. It just reminded me from then on to be aware of my surroundings."
So obviously that left a very lasting impression on that person. Another lasting impression could come from if you saw an incident on television. One guy talked about how he saw the car crash that occurred during the Endymion Parade this year that left a lot of people injured. And he just said he's not going to go any parades after that. So one way or the other, you see this impacting our way of life in the city.
Right.
We also got a chance to go to an event.
Yes. So Indivisible NOLA held this event at the Universal Unitarian Church on Jefferson and South Claiborne. And instead of giving you all of the information, we're going to cut to the tape.
Safety to me has a little different connotation. I'm the president of New Orleans Firefighters Association, and I'm concerned about people's safety from a fire aspect.
To be honest, I don't feel safe, nowhere.
As a cyclist, I'd like to improve street safety because people drive like maniacs here, and there isn't the infrastructure to support cycling that could, you know, A, help more people get to work, and B, promote healthy living in a greener New Orleans.
I still feel safe in New Orleans. I've lived here for 17 years, but I think public safety is one of the major quality of life issues that we're dealing with right now.
It do plays a part when NOPD is around, but their response time on things needs to pick up a little better, you know.
You know, it's hard to feel safe when you see black bodies being threatened by police officers all the time.
If you all wouldn't be here right now and I'm waiting for the bus here by myself, I would not feel safe.
And just for the record, it's like 12:30 in the middle of the day on a Saturday right now. Very good cross-section of the population of New Orleans coming up and speaking to us. How can people participate in the survey if they want to get involved?
Right now, we're at the Mid-City and the Alvar Library, but stay tuned because we are looking to move the post to some new locations this month. But you can always get in contact with us through our cell phone number, 504-303-4348.
Thank you guys very much. We had the chance to speak with the NOPD Superintendent Michael Harrison, who addressed our participants' concerns directly. At the top of the list are the new surveillance cameras and license plate readers installed around the city. Many wanted to know why the French Quarter was prioritized first.
While the first cameras went on Bourbon Street because that was the easiest installation, that's where the majority of our tourists go, that's where the most recent and heinous act occurred, there's never an instance where I believe one neighborhood is more important than another, but we have to start somewhere.
Others wondered if the budget could be spent on the understaffed NOPD. Why not hire more police?
That challenge is nationwide, and every chief, every sheriff are struggling with that right now because we're all competing for the same resources. 97.5% of the applicants wash out of our process. Only 2.5% make it through to become police officers.
He also says supplying those officers with the resources they need is a big challenge. Finally, did he agree with Mayor Landrieu's assessment that crime is perpetuated by drugs and alcohol and an unwillingness of witnesses to step forward?
It is poverty, it's education, it's skills, jobs, opportunities. faith-based, it's parenting skills, it's conflict resolution skills, it's critical thinking skills, it's all of that either missing or misused.
Maybe the solution to public safety is just as diverse. That's it for this episode of The Listening Post. Remember to join our conversation by texting the word hello to 504-303-4348 or check us out at listeningpostnola.com. I'm Thomas Walsh, and until next time, New Orleans.
This is Captain Black reminding you that our microphone is your microphone.
We'll see you then.
The Listening Post is a community media project that creates a conversation around local news. Call or text 504-303-4348 to join the conversation. New Orleans' own PJ Morton has definitely made a name for himself over the years. Just a few months after releasing his fourth solo album, entitled Gumbo, the Maroon 5 keyboardist is gearing up for the Essence Music Festival, and he's taken time to join me in studio today.
PJ, you're not mainstream enough, yeah. Would you consider us changing some stuff?
PJ, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So it's official. You're back in New Orleans.
I am
here.
And
you have the most befitting album title. Tell us about Gumbo.
Yeah, well, Gumbo, you know, definitely part of it is because I'm back in New Orleans. It's the first album I made in New Orleans. But really, the reason it's called Gumbo is because I mixed a bunch of subject matter. You know, usually I talk a lot about love. This time I wanted to talk about more. I really wanted to challenge myself to talk about more. So I talk about creative freedom. I talk about religion on the album. I talk about there is love on the album, mm-hmm. as well as like fake friends. And,
you know,
I talk about a lot of different things on the record. So in my mind, it was mixing all of these different things to make this one beautiful thing. And it's made in New Orleans, so that sounded like Gumbo to me.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely feel you with the name of it. Before even listening to any of the music, I said, he's back home.
That's right. That's right. That's
right. He's back home. And this album is actually your first self-released album. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Morton Records.
Yeah, Morton Records is, you know, it was an idea I had before I moved to New Orleans. But when I got to New Orleans, I think the vision fully like came together. I saw what my purpose was and what my mission was with Morton Records. And this is the first studio release on Morton Records. It's really exciting because, I'm focusing on New Orleans, first of all. We're calling it the Motown of New Orleans.
Yeah, I like that.
Motown focused on people who were in Detroit, and
right.
they developed the talent that was there. And I think New Orleans, there's no better place where there's talent. So we're focusing on finding people here and developing the talent here and getting it out to the world. The Motown sound and all of that became important to the whole world, and I just think that we can do that in New Orleans.
And that's just one of the things you're doing to pretty much stir up the music scene here in New Orleans.
Yeah. I've been doing, you know, whatever I can. We do a monthly jam session at the Ace Hotel. And that is to bring talent. It's less about me. I don't really perform. I just host it. And it gives a platform to the talent here because to hone your craft, you got to have somewhere to play and play
right.
in front of people.
Yeah. Now, let's go back 14 years ago, right, when
mm-hmm.
you first left the city.
Yeah.
I read in an article that you said that you never thought you'd be back.
Yeah.
What changed?
You know, I guess my heart changed. You know, when I was growing up here, I kind of felt out of place, you know. I wanted to write big songs. I wanted to be on the radio. I wasn't a jazz musician. I wasn't a rapper. And I was different. I wanted to do soul music, you
mm-hmm.
know. And there just wasn't really that music business infrastructure here for those visions and those big ideas I had. And pop music, too, you know, I was into. And also, I was a preacher's kid and the only son of my father. And people kind of had their plan written out for me. I was going to
mm-hmm.
take over the church. And none of that was really for me, you
right.
know. So I wanted to get as far away as I could. What's funny is I always wore it as a badge of honor outside of New Orleans.
Oh,
it's
really?
Like, yeah, I'm from New Orleans. Orleans. Mm-hmm. I was proud of that, you know, because I think New Orleans instills in you the pride of it being a special place. So yeah. I was always proud. It was never that. I just said I couldn't be here. But Maroon 5 played Jazz Fest in 2013. And at that point, I had been around the world and seen the world. And when I got to New Orleans, I started seeing the city with totally different eyes. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the seed planted. I was like, man, I do like my city. I do think this is special. Like, I saw it totally different. And then I started getting uninspired in L.A. and found success with Maroon 5. But I was like, okay, I got success. Great. What's next? Mm-hmm. You know? And then when I started thinking about my legacy and integrity and what I wanted to leave here in the city, or just leave, you know, who P.J. Morton will be remembered as, all my roads started to lead to New Orleans. And I feel like it's the best decision I've ever made. I'm happy to be home.
So this weekend, you'll be performing at the Essence Music Festival.
Yes.
And though this isn't your first time, I read in the Essence magazine that this performance is special to you. Tell us why.
Absolutely. I mean, it's my first time. I grew up going to Essence Fest as a young teen. And, you know, this is the first time that I'm local. I'm home again. I can leave from my house and go to Essence Fest. So being able to play now that I'm home and established in my career and coming back to Essence, it really feels like a homecoming. Also because, you know, for me, like I said, a kid being out of place here, that's where I saw my R&B and soul people that I looked up to. Mm-hmm. So now to be in that company and to be back home, which is the home of Essence, it's just really special for me.
P.J. Morton, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yes, yes. Happy to be here. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You can catch P.J. Morton Friday night at the Essence Super Lounge at 8:35 p.m. and check out his new album, Gumbo, on iTunes.
Yes, and Friday in the daytime, we're doing a Morton Records Day Party Barbecue. So I want y'all to come to that for sure. Before my performance that night, we're going to have a good time all day Friday.
When you said go from your house to Essence, you really meant it.
I really meant it. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So we're going to be jamming. It's open to the public. Pantene is going to be giving out free hair products for all the ladies. We're going to have some performances by Denicia and 3D Nati. And it's going to be a good time. So we rolling. We rolling.
I got to work. Thank you, PJ.
Yes, indeed.
You almost got me. Yes, I was just starting to doubt me. But then I remembered that my own mind was my greatest contender. So you could give me all you got, but don't only be never, ever, ever gonna stop till I'm free. You could give me all you got, but don't only be never, ever, ever gonna stop till I'm free. I'm sticking.
You voted, and now we have a winner. WWNO's newest thank you gift is the pocket-sized custom Bluetooth speaker. Get yours when you begin your $15 a month sustaining membership and help us reach our annual goal before tomorrow at midnight. We're so close to making our annual goal, but we're not there yet. So give online and select the new custom Bluetooth speaker at wwno.org/donate, and thank you.
For this week's edition of All Things New Orleans, I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit the website to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.